Welcome to a new episode of Policy Implications Podcast, where policy meets research. I'm your host, Olga Zadrozhna from Kuzminsky University, where I teach on the research in empirical economics. My guest today is Cyrus Dehdary, who is a postdoc at the Swedish Institute for Social Research at Stockholm University and an affiliate researcher at Uppsala University. Cyrus's main area of expertise is political and institutional economics. And today we'll be discussing his recent paper called Economic Distress and Support for Radical Right Parties, Evidence from Sweden, published in Comparative Political Studies Journal. So welcome, Cyrus. I'm very happy to have you on the podcast and be discussing this research with you. But before we start our discussion of the paper, please tell us more about your research and how did you become interested in this topic?
Thank you, Olha. Thank you for having me. I've been interested in political behavior for a long time. So why do people vote? Why and how do they participate politically? But also which parties do they vote for and which factors influence their policy preferences? And one of the largest changes in the political landscape in many Western European countries, but also in some Eastern European countries, is the rise of populist radical right parties, or also known as right-wing parties or far-right parties. In most European countries, these parties are represented in national and local parliaments. And in a few cases, they are actually in the government. And this has happened against the backdrop of increased immigration, but also severe economic crisis, such as the 2008 financial crisis. So these developments and these events have sparked my interest in this particular topic.
And so in your research, you studied the effect of adverse economic conditions on voting patterns for far-right parties. Could you please explain the mechanism behind it? Why economic distress may prompt people to vote for the far-right and populist parties?
So this is the big question. How does economic distress translate into actual support for these parties? And truth is that we don't actually fully understand this, but there are some leading explanations that you can categorize them as either direct or indirect channels. And if we first consider the direct channels, then there are two main channels through which economic distress translates into voting for populist radical right parties. But the first one is related to labor market competition, and in particular competition with immigrants. So as native workers lose their jobs, or as they face a higher risk of losing their jobs, they fear that high labor market competition with immigrants in particular, and as they fear this, they want to reduce competition. And one way to do this is to restrict immigrants' access to the labor market. So they support parties that are calling for closed borders and restricting immigrants from the domestic labor market. So this is known as the labor market competition mechanism. Now, the second channel is instead related to natives' access to welfare services. And here, natives also fear competition, but instead they fear that they have to compete with immigrants for access to, for instance, unemployment benefits, housing benefits, or just general welfare benefits. And if natives have a secure labor market position, they don't feel that they will be in need of these benefits. But once their labor position changes for the worse, their demand for these benefits increase. And again, restricting immigrants' access to these benefits is a way to reduce competition. So these two channels, I call them direct because there's a direct link between voters' impaired economic situation and the restrictive immigration policies that they demand. And these are the policies that are being put forward by populist radical right parties. For instance, increased labor market competition with immigrants, whether it's actual competition or perceived competition, will increase demand for restricting immigrants' access to the labor market. But then we also have an indirect channel where basically economic distress leads voters to lose confidence in the mainstream parties and mistrust politicians in general. They feel disappointed and that the established parties are not, you know, adequately addressing these concerns that they're having. So they turn to political outsiders, and populist radical right parties are ready to capitalize, you know, on this discontent. And which one is the true channel? Well, I would say that it's most likely that all of these are true, and several of them are, you know, valid at the same time and in the same context. So it's not obvious that one of them is more correct than the other.
Right. And so you use this Swedish data in your paper to see if there is a link between this economic distress and the voting patterns. But before we start our discussion of the results and the estimation strategy, could you please tell us more about the Swedish context? What are the main far-right parties there, and do they have a lot of support? So just, you know, an outline of the political spectrum there.
Right. So my paper is set, I study the increase in radical right party support between 2006 and 2010 in Sweden. And compared to most other European countries, the rise of the radical right in Sweden happened relatively late. So there's one main radical right party in Sweden, and that's the Sweden Democrats. And they actually didn't get into national parliament until 2010, which is, you know, more than a decade later than a similar party got into the Danish national parliament. And, you know, these countries are very similar in many respects, but in this respect, they're quite different. But once the party got in, they grew rapidly. And just 8 years later after they came in, so in 2018, they received more than 17% of the votes. And nowadays they're polling at roughly just around 20%. And they have gone from being isolated by all the other parties in parliament to actively cooperating with two other conservative parties in the Swedish national parliament. So, and there's an election later this year, so we will see if they actually are invited into coalition government with these parties that they are now cooperating with.
Oh, that's interesting. All right, so what is your main estimation strategy in the paper? How do you measure economic distress? And what are the main results that you receive?
Right, so how do I measure? Let me start by answering how I measure economic distress. So the data used in this paper, it differs slightly from similar studies on the same topic in two important ways. So number one, I use data on layoff notices rather than unemployment or employment numbers. So a layoff notice means that the worker is informed about potentially being fired. And some who receive this notice are in the end fired, while others are not. But it's very likely that both of them feel economic distress. And there are two benefits to using these data. So the first one is that layoff notices are more likely to be a sudden disruption in workers' economic status, which means that it's more likely to capture an economic shock, which can be used for causal identification. The second benefit is that layoff notices capture economic distress, not only among workers who become unemployed, but also among those who are at risk of being unemployed. So if we only look at employment or unemployment numbers, the latter group won't be included in our measure of economic distress. Now, the second way that these data differ from most other similar studies is that it's based on full population administrative data. So in addition to knowing who received a layoff notice, I also have a number of socioeconomic and demographic background characteristics. For instance, I know whether they were have a Swedish or a foreign background. I also know their highest attained education level. So with this information, I can construct aggregate numbers of layoff notices for different social groups. And I aggregate these to the election precinct, which are rather small geographical units with an average of just about 1,000 eligible voters in each precinct. And these are then matched with election outcomes. So the vote share for the Sweden Democrats in the 2006 and the 2010 national elections. So these are the elections just before and just after the financial crisis. And to identify a causal link, I use a so-called shift share design, where I construct industry-specific national trends in layoff notices and the sectoral composition in each precinct. And the idea is basically to capture the number of layoff notices in each precinct that do not depend on that precinct's local conditions. So for instance, local sales or local crime that we are worried that might be affected, or rather we are worried that they might affect both voting for the Sweden Democrats, but also economic distress and in particular layoff notices. So let me just give you an example. I just considered a precinct somewhere in Stockholm, precinct A, for instance, where almost all of that precinct's carpenters, they receive a layoff notice in 2009. However, if we look in the rest of the country, a very low share of the carpenters receive layoff notices. So this suggests that the notices received by carpenter in precinct A were most likely due to some local conditions. So in this case, the shift share instrument will predict a low number of notices in this particular precinct that is due to national trends rather than local conditions. And when I use this shift share instrument as an instrument in an IV setting for the actual number of notices, I find that only layoff notices received by low-educated native workers have a positive effect on support for the Sweden Democrats. For other social groups, such as low-educated foreign-born workers or high-educated natives or high-educated foreign-born workers, there is no effect. And in addition, I find that the positive effect is stronger in precincts with a large population of low-educated immigrants, but weaker in precincts with many high-educated immigrants. And this suggests that the main channel is about labor market competition that I mentioned earlier, as workers of the same skill level are more likely to compete with one another.
Right, interesting results. And do you think these results are Sweden specific? Do you think they can be found in other countries as well?
It's difficult to know exactly, but I would expect the results to be the same or at least similar in other countries, at least Western countries, with a similar political landscape as in Sweden. So in countries with a large and growing populist radical right party that is represented in the national parliament, and also with a relatively high share of immigrants. So for instance, in countries as Belgium, France, or Austria. So in countries where an economic shock could be channeled through fear of labor market competition, basically. And it's not obvious that a high presence of immigrants is needed, but surely it helps. It helps these type of parties to capitalize on the economic distress that the native workers are experiencing.
Yes, right. And so what are the main policy implications of your paper? Is there anything policymakers can do to prevent the far right and populist parties gaining popularity at times of economic distress?
I have to give a disappointing answer and say that the short answer is at least I don't make any explicit policy implications or that's not the aim of the paper. And I think it depends on who you ask as well. So this topic has been and is still today very salient in Sweden, and there are still public and debates about exactly how economic distress affects populist party voting. And I think it depends on the ideology of the person that you are asking. So you might get different policy suggestions ranging from, you know, we should strengthen workers' labor rights to we should actually weaken them. And again, in the paper, I don't make any specific policy recommendations, but I realize that the results have high policy relevance, so I should focus on the policy implications, perhaps in a follow-up study.
Yes, for sure, because these results are important. And I guess, you know, just discussing them, it makes also sense in you know, for the wider audience and for us understanding what actually is going on and why these populist parties, far-right parties, they are gaining popularity, because it's not obvious very often in many societies. And not many people just think about that, you know, as a trend. And now you give this explanation. And I think that's important to also try and deliver this explanation to a wider audience so that more and more people understand this mechanism and try to think. So is it really what I want for my country to have that many far-right and populist politicians in power? Do they bring any value to me personally, to the society? Does it make sense for my economic conditions? Does it bring value to me and my family, etc.? So thank you very much, Cyrus, for this wonderful discussion, very important discussion. And I hope people will, you know, listen to this episode and get educated on these issues. I think, you know, as discussing them, it brings value to you know, many levels, basically.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you about this.
Me too.
Thank you.
Thank you as well.